here tonight. So, you never know.
Excuse me if I do this.
Again, just for the benefit of everybody, please turn off your electronic devices or turn them on mute. And we'll start with roll call, please.
Commissioner Snappa.
Here.
Commissioner Geary is excused.
She's out of town.
Yeah. Commissioner Blackburn.
Here.
Commissioner Taggart.
Here.
Commissioner Christopher.
Here.
And Supervisor Couch. Not here.
I texted him, so I don't know. Okay, thank you. We cannot approve the summary of proceedings from last month because we don't have it printed out for the commissioners to vote on. So we'll do that next month along with this month's summary.
So can we make a motion to move it to next month's agenda?
Okay.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to move the approval of last month's meeting to next month's meeting.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Consent agenda. These agenda items before the Animal Services Commission may be acted upon with one motion if no member of the commission or audience wishes to comment or ask questions. So we have a little bit of correspondence, and these are on a couple of emails regarding a video regarding the city. It's really what it is. Since we have the time, if you could explain, I didn't see the video. If you could explain the video to us, that would be great.
Yeah, and my apologies, the original emails didn't come through. One of them came through, it was strange. It was a text message that texted through email, and so it was like an attachment of an attachment of an attachment. So it was tough for us to figure out how to forward it to you. But they were both asking for investigation into a video that was seen online of what appeared to be a lady kicking her own dog several times. It was subsequently determined that it occurred in the city of Bakersfield. There was some collaboration between city and county, and once it was determined whose jurisdiction it was, they took the case and they investigated.
Okay. All right. Any discussion on that? Cut and dry. So I guess we need a motion to receive a file.
I'll make a motion to receive a file.
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Public presentations. Let's see. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter not on this agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the commission. The commission may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. Speakers are limited to 2 minutes, and the clock is working tonight. So, table two, any comments? Okay, come on up, please.
Hi, Jean Rager, 93314. Hello, everybody. Do I need to read this?
Yeah, just read it out. There you go.
Can you hear me?
Not really.
I think we're okay.
Okay. I know. It's like a huge crap. Two things. One, and it may have been addressed before, but the answer may have went. But a friend of mine his daughter hit a dog. And the dog was fine, it just had a road rash, but they experienced frustration with it happened on Meany. They went to Animal Services, they scanned, but since the ones that were taking it, their address was in the city, they were told to go to, in the city, they were told to go to Mount Vernon. And it took them 4 hours out of their day to, get this all sorted out, waiting and stuff, and he kept asking me, why do they base it on that address? The address of the person turning it in. And I didn't know what to tell her. So that's just kind of a question for me to you or whoever can answer it.
I can answer.
Give you a response.
Yeah, so the short version of the answer is that years ago when the city and county were partnered at the Mount Vernon location and there was a separation, county went to Fruitvale and the city stayed at Mount Vernon, there had to be a lot of discussions because now the city was going to be taking pets from the residents as well. And we had always, up until that point, determined jurisdiction by where the pet was found. The city had a disagreement. They wanted to classify jurisdiction by the address of the resident that found the animal. We couldn't have two different intake policies because we would end up alienating some people in the community. They wouldn't have anywhere to go.
And be even more confusing.
Right. So we gave in and we adopted their intake, their jurisdiction definition, and that's why it is the way it is.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Now I can go back to him with an answer.
There you go.
It doesn't make it any easier.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. But I'm glad that they took the time and persevered, and interrupted their work day rather than just leaving the dog, And then it turned out it had a chip. The owner didn't want it, but it was adopted from a rescue. So the rescue, they're working, anyway.
Was it, if you don't mind me asking, was the animal, severely injured or?
No, it was just because it ran out and got stuck under the vehicle and said it was just a road rash. There was broken bones, no internal injuries, no, punctured wounds, nothing.
Because most of the time, if people come to us, the county shelter, with an animal, regardless of where they live, if it has an injury, that's life-threatening, we're going to take the animal anyway.
I don't know why, but he did say specifically the animal services would do nothing other than scan the chip. And I just told him, I go, that both, city and county are so overwhelmed and busy, but that, I appreciated he did the right thing and didn't just leave it, running around.
Yeah, we pretty consistently, when we get city residents with pets, especially if there's nothing wrong with the animal, sometimes we're making an exception if it's on a Monday because we know the city shelter is closed on Monday. But if it's another day of the week and there's nothing wrong with that animal, no, we tell folks to take it over to the city.
It was a Friday. So. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I forgot to mention before is that Redemption Ranch, you can get, Bakersfield College students can get work experience credit by going through Bakersfield College and stuff and volunteering at Redemption Ranch.
Redemption Ranch.
Yes. And I brought
that's
brochures.
That's a new one for me.
So I just wanted to put that out there. I don't know why I didn't think about it. I'm looking it up.
We used to see students in the audience for a couple of years. We haven't seen any in a while. But so you're telling me they can get credit.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us the quick version of Redemption Ranch.
Quick version is it's a pit bull and American Mustang horse rescue. Her niche is transforming the animals into service and therapy animals for first responders, veterans. You don't have to be any of those. You can have suffered a TBI, trauma, some sort of trauma and stuff, but that's her ultimate goal. Still a young organization. She turns 3 in next month. So experience growing pains as far as not enough volunteers to, help. So we haven't had enough volunteers to start getting some of these dogs out to socialize. There are opportunities the third Saturday of every month to go to Columbus Estates, which is a retirement community, taking some of the volunteer therapy animals there. And then we've been out at second Saturday at Wildest Dreams parking lot. Started with that.
What parking lot?
Wildest Dreams.
Oh.
The Beverly's Fabrics building. So, yeah. That's just a quick version. She's on Facebook. She's on Instagram.
You mentioned horses.
Yes.
So tell me a quick story about the horse part.
I don't know as much about that because personally I'm afraid of horses.
Oh, you are?
Experience
that
I
part
had.
Gets my attention.
Yeah. Well, that one's stagnant. That part of the program's stagnant because there's not enough volunteers.
No.
And she doesn't have a trainer. She does have one horse, but it's not broke. She's looking for a trainer to help, break that horse so she would feel more comfortable riding it. And ultimately is looking for a property to bring all of it under one, place so people can actually go. She can actually have programs for veterans or whoever and start actually having programs. So, like I said, it's a young, young organization. So
it's interesting how they bring in the veterans to help the animals, but the animals really help the veterans.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things is rescuing animals to rescue people in need of redemption. That's her tagline.
Oh, okay.
So
okay, we'll talk more after the meeting. It's real good. Thanks for bringing that up.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Okay, table 3, Susan, who I haven't seen in a while. Michelle or Danny, anybody?
Yeah.
You're blocked.
Yes.
Do that on purpose.
Daniel Litterbull, 93308. I just had a question, kind of a follow-up question from a previous meeting and also a Facebook post from Kern County Animal Services, which is there's an email address where you can send information about backyard breeding, like a screenshot or whatever. I was just looking up on my phone. It was posted on February 14th. And because I think it's a good thing, I just got through resharing it as I was sitting there. But my question is, how has that been going? Are you seeing results from that, that push to get backyard breeding, reported and stuff like that? So I don't know if that's something to address now or during your report, but I'm just curious about how that was going.
I'm happy to answer. Commissioner, can I answer?
Yeah.
Okay. So the volume of calls that staff has had for commercial animal facility permit enforcement has been significant, but the calls that are pending and are being worked are almost all developed and entered by the officers themselves. I think we've gotten 6 email complaints, and they were from 2 people. All 6 emails. One of them's in this room right now. So the volume could be greater. That's not to say that the officer assigned to that task does not have enough work to keep her busy. She's got a full box of calls. But yeah, absolutely. As part of my director's report, as a reminder that if you are scrolling Facebook and you see somebody advertising puppies for sale, take a screenshot. If they're not posting their commercial animal facility permit number, feel free to send it screenshot into CAFP@kerncounty.com. Alternately, if you're curious if you need a commercial animal facility permit, you can email for information and we'll be able to tell you how to walk through the process and we'll walk through it with you.
And just a quick follow-up question. I think I know the answer, but if they did not post it publicly on, let's say, a specific page or on their public profile, if they send you a private message saying, are you interested, that's okay to send as well, correct?
Yeah, I would say don't worry about the content. Just send it to us and we'll look into it. We had one person that sent us some information, screenshots of somebody selling puppies, and we were able to find out that the person that was advertising was in Arizona and they were advertising on social media here locally for some reason, probably because there's money in it. But so I mean, that's the sort of thing where just if you see it, screenshot it, send it in, and we'll take action. If it's not something that we can follow up on, we'll try to reach back out to you. I've been mostly reaching back out to the complainants to tell them what happened.
All right, thank you. Thanks, Janice. Okay, table 4, any comments? Okay, cool. Table 2, you came in late. Did you have a comment you'd like to make real quick? Okay.
Thank you for including me, I appreciate that.
Okay.
I was actually out dressing about this when I dressed this way. My question is...
What is your name?
Priscilla Cervantes, and the zip code that I live in is 93306.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm a local realtor.
Okay.
We all come here and we talk about our issues, specifically with animals. I don't really want to point fingers because obviously it's a community and a culture issue in this community. I guess my thought process recently is how do we get more funds allocated so that we have resources to support the overwhelming amount of just animals everywhere? I guess, maybe, I don't know if this is the right place for me to be talking about that.
No, it's a good question.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking, I feel like I come here and I feel like I'm wasting my time. And I kind of feel for you guys. I think we come here, it's a routine. So I'm just thinking, how do we, we need more solutions.
Well, we've come a long way in the last few years. I'll let Nick talk about it in detail. But, before there was a TNR program, we get a quarter of a million every year. We didn't have that years ago. We didn't have the money from Petco that we have most of the time. So we've come a long way, and please answer the rest of it.
Yeah, so I think your question was, is how do you get more resources to solve the problems we face? That's a very broad question. You know, to answer your question, we would need to talk about what resources are we talking about. In my opinion, one of the biggest resources to fix the problems that we face is spay and neuter. The county contributes $350,000 to spay and neuter every year. They've contributed at least $200,000 every year since 2014. If you're talking about more personnel, like more officers on the street, more shelter workers in the facility, you know, that's talking to your elected officials and asking them to provide more resources to whatever department you felt needed more resources. The thing to always keep in mind is that when you talk to a politician that has the ability to direct resources, you're not the only one in their office that's asking for resources. There's people that feel that law enforcement are most important, that you know, children are most important, that animals. So there's always a push and a pull and a tug.
Being at the very back of the totem pole.
I wouldn't say right now it's the back of the totem pole. It certainly.
Well, let's be realistic. I mean, you look at the drug problem in this community, the homeless problem, there's other issues. I get it, you know, and that's where I'm just kind of like, it's really surprising me that how far we've come and how progressive, you know, we've become as well. But still, like, people, when they talk about Kern County, even my clients that are moving here from LA and the Bay, and they're like, what the hell is wrong with this town? It's so ass backwards. I don't even know what to tell them. And I have people that will call me, and I'm like, I'm a full-time realtor. I do not technically rescue. I only support the people like that are in this room that are typically here just because I see how inundated and overwhelmed they are. And so I just think that there's, I mean, I know everyone's doing what they can collectively, because I go into the shelter, the city and the county, and I'm just like, I'm like counting and I'm looking and I'm paying attention. I'm like, I don't want to point fingers. I want to really just focus on a solution, you know?
I would just like to say, don't ever feel like you're wasting your time being here. You know, we all are here. I've been coming here, 6 years now or something. And I mean, you know, it is. It's unfortunately no easy fix, but there is, you know, everything we do is a move in the right direction. So
I appreciate that.
There's that, absolutely.
I wanted to make a comment as well and just say that I've made this comment here before. But it's really difficult. Like the other hat that I wear, I work in politics. I lobby politicians pretty often, and it's really difficult here. As someone in real estate, I think like you probably know that the folks in LA or whoever that are moving in here probably see our property taxes as like more attractive and wherever they're from, right? So that itself like contributes to our county coffers, right? How much money we actually have to spend on all of these things. And so, like, it's really, really difficult when, you know, county workers haven't had a raise in, you know, what, like, 13 years. They finally got one. You know, the sheriff's office wants more money. Fire department wants more money. And it's hard for, you know, for someone like Couch or Perez or whoever it might be to say, okay, well, we're going to take, you know, more money and put it towards animal control when, you know, the sheriffs and fire department, SEIU, all these other workers and organizations are saying, like, we're drowning too, right? We need the funds too. One of the things I've suggested is if you did want to try and do this, and I hope that, you know, rescue folks get together to try and do this one day, is to get something on the ballot that would earmark funds, like a sales tax or something that would earmark funds to go directly to county animal services, either to spay and neuter or to bring on more animal control officers. Nick, I don't know what the breakdown was, but I think you said that what we have 14 animal control officers or something like that, but we're, due to population, we're supposed to have, how many was it?
So, It's a complicated question. More complicated than it sounds. It depends. It depends who you talk to. It depends what organization you go with. But the general staffing formula is between one officer between 15 and 18,000 residents in a community. So the Kern County population subtracting for incorporated municipalities is around 400,000 people. So if you extrapolate 15,000 to 18,000 per officer, we should have 19 to 20 animal control officers. We're funded. Our structure allows for 15. Only 13 of them are funded, and two of them are currently vacant. So I could talk to you for 6 or 7 hours about all of the obstacles that we face. But I would say my piece of advice that I want you to carry away is that you have an elected official who supervises your district wherever you live, whether it be city or county, and you should get to know them, and they should get to know you, because if nobody's in their office telling them what's important to them, then they don't have any motivation to act.
I appreciate that.
And sometimes it's not enough that one person is in their office. Right. Sometimes it takes a number of them.
No, I get it. And well, I found myself in a situation 2 weeks ago where I was coming down the 178 and I seen some dogs loose. So of course, me being who I am, I go and I follow them. And so I got out the car and some man and some people started screaming at me and they're like, get in the car, the dog's aggressive. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm like, okay, so I get in my car and I'm like driving around and I'm kind of like basically monitoring because it was during lunchtime and there was people out. And here I find myself in my car pretty much patrolling and telling people, hey, these dogs are aggressive and I've seen the dogs like trying to attack people. So I'm like driving around like an idiot, excuse my language, just thinking to myself, where's animal control? And everyone's like, we tried calling them, nobody showed up. So I started thinking about, well, this is a really scary situation. This isn't even about rescue. This is more about the well-being of people in our community. And not to say that animal control isn't doing their job, but there's just not enough to support the amount of animals that are on the street, and not even the animals in need, but the animals that are aggressive. So that was really scary for me. And it made me change my perspective. Like, I'm thinking, holy crap, I've never been in this situation. I was more concerned in this situation about the well-being and the welfare of these people. So, okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, we'll bring it back up. No other comments. The reason I mentioned horses is, you may not know this, but in World War I, I'm kind of a historian, 8 million horses and donkeys and mules died in that war as a result, mostly of the weather. You know. So, I like all animals, but horses in particular, I really pay attention because they were abused so terribly. And I have a friend of mine, I'm doing my first ride-along next week, for horses that are ignored or, on the hooves part and they start curling underneath the hoof, what he does is he gets them back to where they should be. It might take 2 or 3 treatments to do it, but a lot of times they just neglect the horses. And so this guy's trying to help out. So I thought that was interesting that you were talking about horses. Okay. We're going to move on. Staff announcements or reports, directors, monthly report, please.
Oh, that's me.
It's you.
Set the timer. Will they want to run the timer?
You just set the timer the last few times. Who cares?
You run it every week.
I can get it. Good evening, everybody. Colin, Director of Kern County Animal Services. I just wanted to touch on some highlights in the director's report. It was a busy February for us. Foster continues to be one of the most viable methods for us to get animals out of the facility alive, especially with the backwaters being used for surgeries right now. We're really trying to invest a lot in vaccine clinics. In the month of March, I think we had one off-site clinic and then 4 in-house clinics, and they're all well attended except for the off-site clinic that was not well attended. That was at Rex Maine. Adoptions to date are slower than they usually are around this time of year. 253 dogs so far this year have been adopted, 78 puppies, 50 cats, and 57 kittens. It's probably about 20% less than what we're used to seeing right now, 10 to 20% less than what we're used to seeing. Rescue numbers are down as well. By the way, there was an organization, it's really a website, but it's an organization called Shelter Animals Count. And if you're ever curious, you should check them out. Just do a Google search for Shelter Animals Count. And what it is, it's a nationwide effort to standardize the submitting of animal shelter statistics, how many animals come in and how many make it out alive. Maddie's Fund and the Petco folks and a bunch of different organizations tried to put some funding behind this effort. So all across the nation, people contribute to this Shelter Animals Count. We enter our statistics into the Shelter Animals Count. And the reason why you do that is so that you can see trends statewide and nationwide in animal sheltering. With us being just through the new year, there's a whole another year of data, which encapsulates 2021. And it's a long way of me saying that what the entire state of California is experiencing is almost identical to what we're experiencing, which is less animals coming into the shelter than 2019, but more than 2020, obviously, and more than 2021, and a significant decrease in the amount of members of the community coming in to adopt pets, and shelter engagement, rescue engagement too. So what we're seeing here, which is struggling with rescues and adoptions as far as an outcome is concerned, it's pretty standard across the state. That's not good news, but it's kind of, at least we're not in this boat alone. You know? We did have an adoption promotion in the month of February for Valentine's Day. We ran a $14 promotion between February 12th and February 19th. It was pretty successful. It pretty much gave us majority of the animals that were adopted during that week. Our volunteer program, Commissioner Blackburn pointed this out, that yes, we made a significant effort to bring in new volunteers and train them and apply them to all the areas of the shelter. And the gal that we have that's managing the volunteer program right now, she's doing a bang-up job. In February, she brought on 44 new volunteers. She has 85 active volunteers as of the end of February, and 442.3 hours were donated. And there have been times, you know, we talk about problems that we face in the animal shelter. Not only is it tough to operate with the resources that we have, but as some of you may know, it's hard to find people to apply and to take a job even when you have the money to pay them. So our staffing has been decimated just from attrition, just from positions being vacant and us not being able to fill them. And so our volunteers stepped in and really filled a big role in the past month or so. Just wanted to send a shout out to them, which you guys are all volunteers too, technically. Mm-hmm. Wanted to send a shout out to the Central California Animal Disaster Team. Commissioner Geary's not here tonight, but her and her team volunteered on Sunday in February, and I think they had 8 or 10 of their volunteers come out and just partnered up with our staff and helped run dogs back and forth, helped clean kennels, and that allowed us to get every adoptable animal out of the kennel and participate in play groups, and it was super beneficial for the animals in the facility. Wanted to throw out a reminder, if you have questions about a commercial animal facility permit, whether you need one or not, email us at cafp@kerncounty.com. If you know of somebody who is breeding or selling dogs or cats without a permit, you can email a complaint to cafp@kerncounty.com. We'll look into it. Another reminder, for the Streets of Bakersfield program, it's super important. If you don't know what the Streets of Bakersfield program is, it's just not an extension, it's really a shortening of the foster program. What it is if you have a couple hours to take a dog and go for a walk or a hike, or there's a lady that used to come in once a week and she'd take a shelter dog out on a boat on Lake Ming. Streets of Bakersfield is a short-term foster program, just to get animals out of the facility. even for a couple hours. And why that's so beneficial to us is because a lot of our pets, we don't get to, especially now, we don't get to interact with them often enough for us to be able to get specific input on their personality and the things that they like and don't like, situations that they're good in and not good in an environment outside of the shelter. So the Streets of Bakersfield program is super important because it allows us to get information from a foster who took an animal just for a couple hours, and it's less resources on them. You know, they're not taking an animal for several days, they're just taking it for a couple hours. So anybody who's willing or able, come down and speak to our foster team about becoming a foster and taking an animal on the Streets of Bakersfield. A new offering we have is a program called Home to Home. This is a program that you know, we know people, especially during the pandemic, but even now, struggle to make ends meet, and the last thing we want is for them to give up on their pet because they can't make ends meet. And we do accept owner surrendered dogs, just not at the clip that we used to. It's based on space. If you come to me and you need to surrender your animal, and another animal is going to lose its life because you need to surrender your animal, a lot of times we turn people away with a surrendered dog. But this program called Home to Home, there's a QR code in the director's report. What it does is it connects people that need to surrender their animal with people that might be looking for an animal, so that the animal never has to enter the facility. It's been super successful in other cities, and we partnered with them. It's on our website. It's one of the home page banners. So if you know of somebody that's trying to rehome their pet, it's another option for them to at least look into.
Just go on Facebook and contact them all.
I saw it on Facebook as well.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
Yeah.
Is that a free service?
It's free, yes. You know, we can't offer too many services for folks that are needing to rehome their pet, which it happens, but at least we were able to find this organization that seems to be succeeding in other areas.
So I have a question. So if somebody wants to rehome, you know, their instinct is always to get a rehoming fee, so you're not giving it to somebody who's going to use it to, you know, treat shampoo or something. So where is the line of somebody wanting to rehome the pet with a rehoming fee versus, you know, I don't want to be caught being a breeder and selling my dog maliciously, you know?
So is the question, why would we partner with an organization that doesn't charge you?
No, I mean, if it's free to somebody who wants to rehome their pet, but that person feels they want to charge a rehoming fee, mm-hmm, to whoever adopts the pet.
Yeah, it's more of a marketplace, so I don't know that the organization itself, it's just a website, it's just a marketplace that connects, okay, people that are looking for a pet with people that have a pet that they need. I don't know that they have any restrictions on whether or not you can charge a fee to rehome that animal.
Okay.
It's no different than Craigslist.
Maybe I'm not.
Is Craigslist a great thing anymore? You know?
So, if somebody were wanting a rehoming fee for their pet, that would not fall into your breeder's thing.
The commercial animal.
That somebody would report that for the commercial animal, correct? No.
No. You're saying that if somebody sells their or rehomes their dog and charges a fee, are they guilty of,
correct,
operating without a seller's permit?
No. No. Okay. I just want to be clear on that.
Yeah, and actually, the way that the commercial animal facility permit ordinance is written, the director has a lot of discretion.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, no, that would not fall under that. We did have World Spay Day celebration at the animal shelter on Tuesday, February 22nd. We were able to partner with two veterinarians from BCA, another local veterinarian, and then SNFBus, and between the four of those veterinarians and some volunteers and also some registered veterinary technicians that came out and worked for the day, we accomplished 115 spay-neuter surgeries on site on Tuesday, February 22nd. And it was, we hadn't done anything like that for a couple of years, so it was nice to see the community come out, bring their animals. Just another example that if you make the resources available, people will show up. another shameless plug for DocuPet too. I know there's not too many people in the audience, but share the information that you know somebody that owns an animal that needs to be licensed. It is the law in the county of Kern to license your dogs. You can volunteer to license your cat, but it's not a law. But we just partnered with a new organization called DocuPet that makes the process to obtain a county license just much easier, much more efficient, and it combines the desire of most pet owners to have a designer pet tag on their animal, or even a tag with information on where the animal should go. That can be your county tag. Go to the county's or our website, animalservices.org, and there's a link right on the homepage to license my pet. It'll take you right to DocuPet.
Nick, you know if the city's done that as well? Or?
DocuPet?
Yeah.
Not that I know of. Not sure. I'm sure I would have heard about that. Our spay neuter efforts were pretty busy in the month of February. We had five clinics. We had February 3rd and 4th. And then the 17th and 18th, and then the 22nd, which was World Spay Day. There was 112 surgeries on the beginning of February, 103 spay neuter surgeries on the 17th and 18th, and then snip busted another 52 on the 22nd. But we do have some more clinics scheduled for this month. March 10th and 11th, which just passed, was in East Bakersfield. We also have the 17th and the 18th will be in Lamont. The 26th will be in Boron. Boron and North Edwards, and then we will be in Button Willow and Lost Hills in April. We won't be, SNPBUS will be, on behalf of the county. And then we'll be in Taft in May and Lake Isabella in May, and then we'll finish out the year in Tehachapi, the two-day clinic in Tehachapi. So that should wrap up most of our spay and neuter activities for the year. We were appropriated $350,000 in spay and neuter this year, and then we also have a trust fund that, by the way, 10% of your licensing goes to a trust fund to support the spay and neuter program. We have about $60,000 left in the trust fund, so the $350 plus that $60 will end up spending all of the spay and neuter dollars by the time June is over, over $400,000. I did include a breakdown of the spay and neuter funding. It is in the director's report. If you have any questions about that, I can ask. We are on target to exceed the $160,000 that was increased recently to support the TNR program. I've had some questions from some members of the public that they're hearing rumors that the TNR program from the county is ran out of funding. That was not the case. It was just something that we were monitoring closely, just because we had spent far more than we'd ever spent before on TNR. So we're just watching it closely. Critters and I were watching it closely, but we have the funding to last the rest of the year. I think that concludes my presentation. I can answer any questions.
Okay.
I had a question, Nick. Okay. I noticed in the field services that Tehachapi's got a little higher there. Usually we're in the 40s, second only to Ridgecrest, and we're almost as many field calls as Lake Isabella. Just wondering if there was all of a sudden a push for everybody to call.
No, there's usually no rhyme or reason to the field calls.
That's like 23 more than last month. Just
Nothing specific happened that I can say. I know that we've had more officers than we've had in quite some time, just because we filled some vacancies.
So maybe a little bit more of a presence in the area was able to...
It could be.
Okay.
It could be, or it could just be purely coincidence.
Just always looking for that number, you know.
So you want to keep
you
that.
Instead of me.
We want to keep that number low.
Yes. I understand that. I never have gotten to where, and I should, to, if I were to document the calls that I get in my rescue, the calls and emails every single day, and I know I should and report it to you, but we do always encourage them to call you first, mm-hmm. and then to call and see if we can help as well. And maybe that's where these numbers are finally being reflected, as our message is getting through to call you guys so that we get our representation. I think that is all.
Okay. I have a quick question. On World Spay Day, 115 animals, that's a lot. Is that
way more than normal. I forget what they've been in years past. Is that way above?
It's about what we've done before in one day.
Does anybody get turned away at an event like this? Like if they're in line and they've got their animal, they're at 115 and they say, oh no, we're stopping? Or
no, well, so you got to keep in mind, these are our walk-ins. These are people that we had scheduled to bring their animal down that day weeks in advance. So if somebody's showing up, they're showing up because they have an appointment. Yeah. But there's, I think, one person that was turned away. It was just because their animal was either too sick or too injured to be altered.
Okay. And on the mobile clinics, the same thing. I mean, that's a lot. 112 space on the third and fourth. Are there any people turned away at these events, or are these done by reservations in advance?
Same thing. Yeah,
same thing.
There are appointments that are booked in advance and follow-up calls made, and if anybody's turned away, it's just because the animal is not suited for sure. We actually have people on the standby list that sometimes
oh, you do? Okay.
You know, we'll call if there's no shows, people don't show up.
Very good. I was curious, but I mean, that's a lot of energy to do 112 or 103 or whatever. A lot of work involved. So that was all I had. Yeah, that's all I got. Okay, questions from the audience. Table 2, any questions?
I kind of have a silly question. So I recently licensed my dog through DocuPet, and one of my dogs has already lost the tag. And I don't want to keep replacing it, because I've already had that problem with just their name tags that they play. Is that an issue, that they, even though they are registered, and that they don't have their tag?
So, no, the documentation is there. Okay. I mean, it's kind of the same, not too different than the system we had before, which is if your animal's not wearing its tag, we can find out whether the animal is licensed. It's just a different database. We would just pull it up by the address or your name or the animal's ID number if you have it. We can verify the animal's license.
Yeah, they have two callers. One actually has the name of the dog and the phone number to contact. So
I mean, don't get me wrong. You want that tag on there.
Yeah, but if it's not, I'm not going to keep paying money to, you know, because I went looking for it and I can't find it. So, all right.
I have a question. So, since there are these resources, is there correspondence, like mailers, that are going out to specific communities where we're seeing a larger amount of animals?
No.
No. Is that something that we could look at? I guess mainly the reason is that, like, for example, me being in business, I noticed that during COVID, that more people were home, so they were more receptive to the correspondent. So this has me thinking, like, well, what if we're educating and informing the community, because a lot of people don't know that these resources are available. If maybe if they're coming straight to their home, you know, that's another way to get people in the know that these resources are out there.
So just so I can understand the question, is it your suggestion that mailers get sent out notifying people that there's a spay and neuter clinic?
Whether spay and neuter or the licensing, did you know that it's now it's required by the city of Bakersfield or the county that you must, and there will be recourse? I'm just thinking on top of my head.
Yeah, so the spay and neuter thing, I would tell you, we do not have a problem people finding out that we have spay and neuter resources available. That is not a problem.
No.
I am hopeful that we get to that point where that's a problem.
Yeah, no, you guys are busy.
But as soon as we advertise it, they get booked within a day or two.
At least you get to advertise yours.
As far as the licensing is concerned, it's tough because we have to have a name and an address to send a mailer to, and if I don't know who you are and where you live, I can't send you a piece of mail asking you to license your pet. We do send out mailers for people that have licensed their pet before or that have adopted a pet, reminding them to renew their license. And actually, that's what Dr. Vet has taken off our hands now, that they handle those follow-ups for people to renew their license.
Okay, because in my business, like, I can farm. I can get everyone's email, not emails, but addresses, like in certain zip codes. I could send out, me personally, mass mail, and I'm just thinking if you could even give me a PDF, I'd be happy to share that. I'll email you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good question. Okay, table three.
Yeah, I have a question. Status of the distemper in the shelter.
What do you mean by status?
I mean, is it still a big problem? I mean, are you getting a handle on it, or?
None of these questions are always easy, are they? Is it a problem? It's always a problem, Susan. It's been a problem for 15 years. Anytime that we see distemper in the shelter, it is a great cause for concern. And, you know, we had an animal that presented with symptoms and we tested and it was positive. It was 2 weeks ago. Do we have, you know, 40 animals in the shelter that are sick with distemper?
Are the numbers starting to decline? You're not getting as many, or testing?
Our experience, uniquely, I'm not talking about any other facility's experience, but our cases of distemper dropped off significantly late last year. Are we testing? Yes, we still test frequently. Yes.
Is that kind of random, though, or?
We test symptomatic animals.
Okay.
I say that's the direction that I told my staff to take, but my staff goes against my wishes and randomly tests animals that are asymptomatic as well. So most of the times, if an animal is displaying symptoms of an upper respiratory infection, yes, we will send out culture, but otherwise, for the most part, it's symptoms only.
Okay, and as far as getting, I know the large dogs, everybody's struggling to get the large dogs somewhere, and I know you guys have rescue partners and stuff even out of county. Do you guys have any rescue partners out of state?
We do. Some in Washington, some in Arizona, Nevada. A lot of them we haven't really dealt with for a long time because wherever they're from, they're facing similar issues that we are. We had a Las Vegas rescue that used to take 25 or 30 dogs every time they came out, about once a month, and that was prior to the pandemic, and we haven't seen or heard from them since. So yes, we still have those partners, but they're just not in a place where they can come and rescue pets. We're starting to see it pick up, though.
Have you thought about reaching out to other rescues out of state?
We haven't thought about out of
state. I don't know if you guys part of my state or Oregon about rescue.
We haven't thought about out of state because transporting an animal across state lines, they have to have veterinary examination.
Right.
And gets a little bit complex. But when you start talking about the business of transporting animals across state lines, you have to have enough animals to make it worthwhile to transport that far. And so then when you're talking about those large numbers of animals, then you're talking about a health certificate for every single animal that's crossing the border.
Right.
And heartworm testing, and it gets pretty significant. So we haven't done a major transport like that for, I don't know, 3-4 years. But right now, our team is looking into transports within the state. And we've got a few contacts, organizations that we really never spoke to before, which is wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody else on table three?
Anna? Quick question. Just to confirm, on the report of intakes, the straight at large, that's a combination of public and animal control officers, correct?
Correct. I will say that report sometimes it rubs me the wrong way because it also includes those animals that went out to foster care and are coming back. So sometimes it looks like it's been brought in twice. Technically has, but
okay. Okay. Okay, that's good. Table four, Carrie.
Hi. Two questions. Number one, there was a small litter of Irish wolfhounds that was dumped on a shelter up in Tatchby, and there was some speculation that maybe it was because of the hotline. Do you know if there was any kind of a Irish wolfhound breeder that was caught on the hotline, you know, reporting?
No.
Nope. Okay. Oh, well, darn. It would have been so great. And second, talk about licensing and having a tag on the dog. Is there a way to correlate a microchip with the license?
You know,
if the dog is found, scan it and go, oh, guess who that belongs to?
So I think what you're asking, maybe, is there any thought to making the microchip the license?
No, just that if somebody has a microchip number, the database, licensing database, will then say, okay, that goes with this license. This microchip goes with this license.
Yes, so the microchip number is tied to the animal's yes. Identification number, which is the same animal that would have the license. Yes.
So it does do that. Oh, perfect. That's all I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost entirely dependent nowadays. When you license your pet, you create an account with DocuPet, and you enter all your information in that animal. So the more information you enter, the better the likelihood that
good. Okay. The
information is accurate.
On DocuPet.
I actually jumped on that website the other day, and it looks very user-friendly.
It is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it is an organization that is a lot of animal shelters are beginning to, which worries me because the cost is probably going to go up, but a lot of animal shelters are opting for it just because they can't provide the services that DocuPet offers. I got a call from the director of Washoe County, Nevada Animal Control. Her name is Cheyenne Schultz. And some of you might remember that she was my predecessor, and she came to me because she wanted a reference for DocuPet. So it's a lot of different organizations are going with DocuPet.
I do have a follow-up question or two. Actually, I was wondering, you mentioned the volunteers are getting the animals out of the kennel.
Well, CCADT did.
I'm sorry?
Debbie's organization, Central Pet Command, they assisted in that. The volunteers aren't entirely participating in playgroups or getting the animals out of the kennels.
How often do they get out without, like Debbie's group, how often do they get out of the kennels in a month?
I don't know.
Do they get out periodically or some they just don't?
I would say periodically, yes.
Periodically, okay. Yeah. That was my first one. The second, you mentioned you appropriated, did you say $350,000 or was that $250,000?
The county board of supervisors gave $350,000.
In addition, this is new money we're talking about? Or is this $100,000 on top of the $250,000?
It's $100,000 on top of the $250,000.
Okay. But we need it, so.
Yeah, well, we're almost done with it.
Didn't take long. Okay, that's all the questions.
Do we have any more questions?
Well, we finished the
three questions.
No, they didn't. They didn't raise their hand.
Oh, okay. I was going to motion to receive the policy.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I did.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I have a question. You guys are going to be in Lamont tomorrow, right? You're going to be 2 days in Lamont?
I believe so, yeah.
Thursday and Friday?
I've double-checked that, but yes, Teresa.
Is it for only spay and neuter or just vaccines?
Only spay and
neuter. The whole thing?
Just
spay and neuter?
Yeah, no vaccine, just spay and
neuter. Spay and neuter,
correct.
Okay. So who's the one that's doing the one in and Truxton?
I don't know.
It's spay and forward.
Yeah, together spay and forward.
Oh, it's a new...
It's by the way, shameless plug. Follow Spay Forward on Facebook.
I don't have Facebook.
You should.
I know.
I mean, can't believe I just said that, but...
I don't know why you're going too fast.
Okay. We need to make a motion to receive and file the director's monthly report.
I'll make a motion to receive and file.
I'll second it.
Okay. We have a motion, a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Director Coleman. Commissioners' announcements or reports. Basically, it talks about in their own initiative, commission may make an announcement or report on their own activities, or may ask a question for clarification, make referral to staff, or take action to have staff place a matter of business on a future agenda. Anything from?
Nothing from me.
Okay.
No. I will be going to Trona High School, though, in Trona on Friday and recruiting, hopefully, some future veterinarians for you. So
we need them.
Yes.
I went to the Tehachapi City Council meeting last Monday and requested help from the city of Tehachapi, either through to fund clinics, possibly for getting grants, because our city seems to be really, really good at getting grants, and or maybe through corporate funding. So I am looking into more resources for specifically community cats in Tehachapi, because being up on the hill, as some of us are, it's, you know, kind of a drive to use critters without litters, and you have to drive down twice in order to spay or neuter a free-roaming cat. That's a lot with gas prices at $5.50 to $6 a gallon. That's just not reasonable. So I don't know where that's going to go, but I'm not going to give up on trying. But Have a Heart Humane Society in 2021 spent $65,000 in low-cost spay and neuter clinics, approximately 10 clinics, and approximately 650 cats were spayed and neutered by my rescue last year. To start.
I'll be doing my ride along with the guy that takes care of the horse hooves. It'd be kind of interesting to see that. They grow so much, but they can't really even walk on their own hooves. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works. Also, I haven't done a ride along in about 3 years. Is that something that's still open, or because of COVID, you're not? Is it it's available?
Sure.
And the commissioners want to do a ride along. It's pretty interesting. I haven't done one in a while, but it's an eye opener.
With an officer?
Yeah, I went with an officer. No. So we just do the whole thing. It's really pretty amazing to see what they really go through. I did do a ride-along in December with Michelle, and Sunday, that was my last ride-along. That was interesting.
It was interesting.
Yeah. I think the dogs were undercover there for the most part because it was so cold.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on to old business. Let's see. Staff referrals. Update on the AKC Reunite fundraising efforts. Anybody have an update on that?
The only thing I have actually from Janice is that she didn't have the exact number. She's busy of high school. And she said that there have been donations made. She doesn't know what the number is directly to AKC, but it's an ongoing thing.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully she can make it maybe next month, or if she gives me information, I'll relay it to you.
You know, it's just really hard to get the word out on stuff. It really is.
Yeah,
I'm a BC, I'm trying to advertise our program, and it's just really hard to get the word out on any kind of a thing you got going on. It's
she's working on mobilizing her high school students to get the word out.
Okay.
Go for it.
It's a really hard thing to do, so I understand. Okay. I'll move on then to status on ordinance subcommittee revisions. Anything?
Yeah, so Council McNutt and I have spoken about this. We have a completed version of those recommendations. I'm going to ask Council McNutt to explain how that'll be presented and why it needs to be presented in the way that we're going to present it for Monty today. It'll be a presentation that's made next month.
Next month, okay.
Jeremy, do you want to?
Sure. The gist of it is that with a draft ordinance, it's a working kind of living document in the sense that it's had multiple reviews, comments, and changes by all sorts of parties, some of which work here, some of which don't. Jerry Bradley, if you remember, had a lot of commentary on it. And because of the Public Records Act and a few other Brown Act, we don't like to give out drafts in general with comments because it's too much of the deliberative, confidential, you know, rights that our clients have as county council to that, you know, it preserves that level of confidentiality. And so once everyone is fully briefed, including myself and Nick, I know that I could ad lib on why the changes were made, et cetera, but, you know, a more fully thought out, planned, like going through the ordinance without actually saying here it is in its text is preferable for a couple reasons. Also, another primary reason for that is that it's actually the property of the commissioners and not of myself or Nick. And so I need to give them advice separately and confidentially prior to discussing that with the public, because once the public gets a hold of something, it can build momentum and it can create expectations. And so the idea is that the commission should be fully apprised on the questions and the challenges and what can and can't be done prior to me. I don't want the first time they're hearing about it to be the first time you guys are hearing it, essentially. So,
yeah, and just to follow up on that, I think back in July, maybe it was August, I gave you guys a brief summary of a recollection, if you will, of what came out of the subcommittee and the bullet points of what the subcommittee wanted done. And then it was our responsibility, really Jeremy and I, to figure out whether those things could be done, and if so, what language could be used in order to make it happen. So we will present that next month, and we'll go through each recommendation to kind of give you the synopsis of how it got to that point. But ultimately, it's the commission's decision whether those ordinances in their form should be recommended to the board. There will be public input all along the way, but that's how it will play out. And I look forward to it.
Okay, great.
I have a question on that.
Oh, sorry.
Well, let me ask this.
Yeah.
Does the commission have any comments on it? Okay. Yes, Michelle.
When you said you want to let them be aware before we are aware, so next month, is it just a verbal going over the ordinances, or by next, there's not going to be any paper here for us to look at?
I might put out a summary.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I was just wondering. I wasn't sure if it was just the verbal part is what you guys were talking about, how you were going to present it.
But we also have people in my office in particular that format the ordinances for being included in the county codes, because there's a lot to it that I don't even fully know how they figure out what to title it and chapter it, and so it hasn't gone through that process yet. But largely, I believe the legal research on it is done.
As far as the number of pages, or how much time will it take to go over the changes? Like when it comes out next month and it's presented, is that something that is going to be, you're going to be at the podium talking about it, or just something that's available and we all just have to look at it on our own?
I mean, in my opinion, this is going to take probably multiple meetings to go over. Yes, I'll be up here, and between Jeremy and I, again, there's not, in the grand scheme of Title VII, there's not all that many changes. Jeremy might disagree, but the things that we were trying to accomplish and how we got from point A to point B or Z, whatever you want to call it, is the part that I'm going to stand up here and try to say, hey, this is how this happened. And this is what we were able to produce from what we wanted. This is what we feel language would legally allow to make this happen.
Similar to previous conversations about this topic that's been had here?
Almost identical, yes.
Okay.
If you were here in August, you pretty much saw what I'm going to present next month. Actually, you probably don't. Never mind.
Any other discussion on this? Okay. All right. Then we'll move on then to new business. Next month on the agenda, we're going to have, assuming everybody's here, we're going to have nominations for a chair and vice chair. We're going to do it annually, and we're maybe a couple months behind, but anyway, that'll happen next month. I guess we need a motion.
We do not need to ask.
We do not? Okay. I'm just wondering about that. Okay. Okay. Let's see. The next meeting is going to be Wednesday, April 20th, 5 days after tax day. So, all right, good. All right. Why don't you get this into a drink?
That's what I said.
Here we are. Okay, we've got a motion. We need a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Closed.